Welcome to the Better Call Saul edition of the Serious TV Drama Podcast with Scott and Dan. I'm Scott, and with me as always, the missing Werner to my Mason Verger, it's Dan. How are you tonight, Dan?
I'm doing good. Good morning to you. Good night to others.
It's that strange time of day where it's both morning and night. And we are joined by someone, if you care to make the intro.
Yes, we decided we wanted to have somebody better than our last week guest. So I decided to pick somebody that was nice and crispy, not too dry, a little bit spicy. So, Jamie, welcome back.
Hey. Hey, guys.
That chicken looked really good.
I didn't even realize you were making a chicken reference from the show. I was thinking, wait. Are you? Did you bring aboard a pizza pie or something? Hey, Jamie, it's good to see you back here, or hear you back here. So, yeah, unlike most weeks, I don't have any annoying anecdotes to start to lead off the podcast with, other than the fact that I was looking forward to this episode for a while. Dan, I think you had mentioned on the previous podcast. They had been mentioned on The Insider that this was one to look forward to.
Yeah, I think so. Or maybe Brian did. Somebody brought it up anyway.
Well, happy one of you guys, because I don't listen to other podcasts, so I know it wasn't me. And once I realized that it was running to like 10:18, I was like, oh, 78 minutes. That's significant. So, and it was. So let's me shut up. Let me get to what we're here to talk about. Yeah, I'm going basically totally scriptless tonight. So let's get me to shut up and let's start talking about the latest episode of Better Call Saul. So this week's episode was titled, and I'm going to mispronounce it the entire podcast, Wiedersehen? Is that the correct way to pronounce it?
There you go.
Yeah.
Because I'm so used to saying with the off part of it, like, Auf Wiedersehen, so I just cut off the first part, and that's the title. So Wiedersehen, it was actually directed by Vince Gilligan, so that was quite notable. Did he direct the premiere this season? I feel like he did.
Yeah, I can't remember. Either him or Gould, I think, did the premiere. But
right.
I don't remember what the deal was.
Yeah, I know I had heard or read somewhere that he hasn't been as strongly involved with the season as he has in the past, but at least he was able to direct at least this episode. That was pretty cool. And it was written by Jennifer Hutchinson, who we've spoken about before. She's a Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul veteran at this point, so no need to go through her little writing resume anymore. So, yeah, this was a pretty significant episode for a couple reasons. We also got some little bits of information, which I would say probably rank in the insignificant category, but it was still kind of fun to see how certain things came to be. And we're probably going to knock off one in our first little section, because let's start talking about where we left off last week with Nacho and Lalo, who we let up this week, where they go to visit apparently Uncle Hector. So, my question for you guys, and since Jamie, you're the guest, we'll start with you, so we don't have the unintentional overlapping here.
Okay.
And this is my thought about something kind of insignificant, but it was still kind of fun. Was there a certain point while Lalo is telling that story, relating that memory to Hector, that you suspected we were going to see the bell? I'm just curious.
Yes. As soon as he talked about going back into the hotel, mm-hmm. I knew it was coming. Well, and they opened, you know, they kind of opened this scene with him, his finger.
Yep.
Kind of trying to tap on something. So I knew it was going to eventually come back around to that.
Right. I mean, I know in a previous episode they showed the finger doing that, which is kind of like a funny little reminder. But the fact that that was like almost the opening shot with him. Once he said souvenir, that's when I went, oh, the bell. It's going to be the bell. And I'm assuming at some point in the scene we're going to see everyone in the room getting annoyed with the ringing bell, which they didn't do, thankfully. I did like the touch of that lady, you know, grabbing her bag and moving it because Nacho was behind her. It was kind of like the not so subtle racism thing going on there. What I always find fascinating, even going back to Breaking Bad, and then we get it again here, is what Margolis does in his performance as Hector once he's in the chair. And it was interesting because, on one hand, there's a certain similarity to what he does all the time, but I like how whether you look at this scene or when you think about all the different scenes in Breaking Bad, how you can just see the certain degrees, like, oh, this means he's angry. This means he's happy. This means, you know what I mean? But it's all, he always has to have like the seething, breathing kind of thing. And you just have to kind of interpret just based on the scene, whether he's in any way happy or sad during that moment. And it's a very interesting acting job to have for such a long period of time, I thought.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know, I didn't give you a watch there. So, it kind of was nice to see that little moment. And I liked how they kind of cut away from them when he wanted to talk about the Chilean, which we know means Gus. And then at the end, he's like, oh, that Hector, he always wants to kill everybody. And I was like, okay. And go on.
Yeah. Oh, this we didn't really need to see a Bell backstory, but I thought it was a kind of an effective way to establish the relationship between the two of them and to kind of, you know, give us a little bit more, more of an introduction to Lalo as we start to build the character more. So I just thought it was cool. You know? Not super necessary, not like an annoying, like, Easter egg, like, anything, but just below that line, maybe.
Right. I mean, for me, I mean, the Bell part was cute and amusing. It's like, oh, that's a mystery I never really thought about and don't really care about, but it's exactly what you said. Also, I mean, beyond knowing that obviously they're related, so obviously they had some sort of, had an ongoing relationship, but it's, again, it's getting a taste of a totally different Salamanca, because we talked about that last week, how he's very different than the other members of that family that we've met before, which, you know, I mean, he's got a certain amount of charm. He hasn't appeared to be crazy yet or whatever. Although the way he talked admiringly of what Hector did in that story already kind of makes you go, okay, there's something wrong with his wiring as well. So
he's got really, really cool skunk-like hair. Very, very nice.
So then later we see them show up at your restaurant, Dan. I mean, at Los Palos Hermanos. So I guess they must have brought back that kid from that earlier episode, the employee who had been there.
Yeah, Lyle.
I love that you remembered his name. I totally didn't.
Lyle.
So we got to have a little bit of Gus Fring in, you know, manager mode. Which I always love when he has to do that, and then he has the conversation with him in the back room. So I kind of like the fact that they clearly, you know, for the most part they're exchanging pleasantries, and I like that Lalo kind of shows how much insight he really has into the whole situation. Because I think he's absolutely right what he was saying about Don Eladio, how he kind of likes the fact there's a bit of bad blood between them. It kind of helps keep things going, but he likes keeping that friction there. But I just like the fact that there's throughout that whole conversation, I thought, oh, there are so many unspoken threats going on here, and clearly marking of territory, and how things are not going to be as they've been. That was a sense I was getting throughout the whole scene, at least. What did you guys think of that scene?
Go ahead, Dan.
Yeah, a total power move, just like he was making last week when he, you know, was just hanging out at the in the kitchen where after Nacho's been around the place for a while, was the same kind of thing, just kind of going around and doing that. It's definitely an interesting dynamic. It's a cold war warrior type thing, but it's definitely cool to see. And I have to say, I enjoy that kind of stuff as much as more, I'd say, than just shoot him out. Stabbing, mm-hmm. car jackings, explosions, violence.
Well, it's interesting when he talks about the working relationship they have, through the Don, is that, that the Salamanca provide the muscle and, Gus is taking care of them, the actual transportation of whatever it is. But it's interesting because if the Salamancas are the muscle, so they're always like the bullies. They're always the, in a sense. Which makes sense when you look at every Salamanca we've met have been kind of, people who deal with brute force and violence and things of that nature. We haven't seen that from this character yet, but everything he's saying makes me think that he's going to be just as sharp a sword as any Salamanca that we've met before. I'm just curious how that will play out over time, because again, I'm still going on the assumption based on the Lalo name reference drop that we hear in Breaking Bad, that therefore means this character won't be killed off, which means there will be some sort of ongoing power struggle or dynamic between them, or maybe minions might be killed but not the main ones. At least that's the way I'm kind of looking at it for now.
Agreed.
Was there beyond that, and of course, I also love the way, this is a show that does tend to use a lot of light and shadow. Throughout its existence, just like all the scenes back at Chuck's house used to always be shrouded in darkness, or at the nail salon, whatever. I really enjoyed the way they shot the scene between Gus and Lalo, how the way, like, when Lalo leans forward, he pushes forward into the light, because he's kind of in shadow. And then when Gus stands up, he's totally in shadow, but you see the look on his face, which kind of grimly shines through, so to speak. I love Esposito on this show. It's one of the great things about having Gus Fring back on the show. It reminds me how great a character and how great an actor he is. I really get a kick out of him every time he's on screen.
Yeah, there's when he noticed them in the restaurant. I just like the look on his face. He just had this look on it. Just like his eyes narrowed. He's just like, do I seriously have to deal with this? It was awesome.
Did you like the? I think there's like two little moments. Obviously they're so brief. Where he and Nacho exchange a look, and Nacho's got
yeah.
Yes.
I'm sorry. What could I do? I had no choice. So I'm really, and because we haven't yet had a scene, because Lalo disappeared last week, and now we had here. We haven't had a scene between Gus and Nacho to, in any way, shape, or form, see them discussing this situation. Not that we've needed it yet, but I'm assuming it's going to happen at some point, because I think we are going to need something like that at some point, because Nacho is in that double agent situation that he's in. So I'm assuming he's going to need some sort of direction at some point. And I guess it left off, I think he's going to take him to where they get the drugs or something, but we never get to that in the episode. I think it's good. Maybe we'll see that.
Can we bring up how awesome of a vehicle Nacho has? Can we just talk about that car for a second? Because it's amazing.
Oh, go ahead.
Okay, so it's an AMC AMX Javelin, and they only made it for, I don't know, like 6 or 7 years. But if he were to have it produced in Mexico, then it would be a VAM Javelin. And I don't, obviously they don't talk about it. So, but I did notice that the AMC on the front of the car, which I thought was kind of funny.
I thought it was a nod to the network AMC. No, hey, look, shout out to the guys who we're working for.
Right.
It is a cool car. I like to imagine that, like, maybe he saw his father working on one at his shop once, and then just like, you know,
right,
like hell yeah, I want one of those, and then he went out and got one. So I kind of like to think about that.
Well, the interesting thing when you think about like this episode specifically, how you have at least three that come to mind right now, three cars that were clearly very, very deliberately chosen for the characters, to the point where they exemplify some aspect of who they are or their personality or what they aspire to be, like that car for Nacho. Of course, Jimmy's esteem, which, you know, I wouldn't have thought they could top the type of car choice they had for Walter White in Breaking Bad until you ended up with, is it the Suzuki? Is it a Suzuki Esteem? I think it is. I can't remember. I'm not a car guy, yeah. So if I screw that up, I apologize. And Mike's car, which, quite frankly, totally looks like the kind of car that a cop would have, and he's an ex-cop, so it really makes perfect sense for him. Actually.
Yeah. And I really like how Lalo is, while he's not like, you know, a brother of the cousins. I mean, I'm sure he's just another cousin of them. But I do like how, you know, how they're like super quiet and hardly ever say anything. And he just like, he will never shut up ever. He's always going to be rattling his mouth the entire time.
Oh, yeah. I'm dying to see them have a scene with them together, because I'm kind of curious how that plays out because of what you just said. He's the polar opposite of them as far as communication.
I want to see him and Jimmy, like, not, you know, or Saul, not, you know, if Saul's not intimidated at that point, just a scene where they're just both, you know, complete motor mouths, because that'd be fun.
That would be fun. But getting back to people who are of less words, I think we could probably shift over to Mike at this point, or as I write in my notes, Mike and the Germans. So this was the episode where we were going to deal with they were finally to blow up that rock that was blocking, that was, you know, holding up the work there, and that's where we see they actually had spray painted Vita Zane across the rock, and I was like, oh, they're kind of screwing with us a little bit here, or are they? I think the big thing was, one of the big things was, I'm just flipping through my notes to try to find out where I am here. Oh, here we go. So they're about to blow it up, and there's a problem with one of the wires. It's a faulty connection or something, and which leads Werner to like track down the wire, go downstairs, whatever. I have to say, it was interesting because of all the scenes in this episode, again, 78-minute long, you know, with commercials episode, I thought that was actually, for me, that was the tensest scene in the entire episode, because I kept expecting something to happen, you know, that he was, you know, that something was going to either cause an unintended explosion, or he was going to actually decide to kill him. So I don't know what, but I was like, I was really very tense during that entire scene where Werner goes downstairs and he ends up having like a panic attack or anxiety or whatever, which eventually he gets over it, and they do end up blowing the thing up. And I wasn't super clear. I mean, I'm sort of clear in what the point of what, what's his name again? Tyrus was doing with the truck. I mean, obviously it was something to try to mask the sound of the explosion. They would be driving by and going over something. I wasn't super clear on that, so if either of you have a better understanding of what happened there, feel free to fill that in, because I was a little cloudy, a little muddy on that. But what was your take on the whole blowing up the rock scene, Jamie?
Well, it looked like when he drove over it, that the grate was popping up, like in the explosion, the grate was going to fly up. Mm-hmm. Along with the noise, I'm sure, because they talked about that some. But I think he was trying to get his timing right to hit that grate so that it wouldn't fly up out of the middle of the street and draw this attention.
Right. I noticed a grate thing, but then I was trying to figure out if it was simply something like that, because I was thinking, then why not just have something on top of it to begin with, as opposed to having to drive over it? So
But wouldn't it be weird to like just, I'm gonna like haul this really heavy grate out into the middle of the road and just set it on top of this grate for a minute? You know, well, if it's moving, it's not going to draw any attention.
But where they are, I mean, it's not like the town is right next to the laundry thing. So that's where I get a little confused. It's not like he's in the middle of town. This is happening. You know, they're a little ways from that. So either a truck is parked there or not, I don't see. I'm not seeing the difference it makes, and I'm probably just missing something. I'm missing something.
So, I think it might have to do like the movement of the vehicle might like have something to do with it too. Like it wouldn't like if it's moving at a certain speed, it like wouldn't damage like the underside of anything, so they'd be able to just like do it without anybody noticing. And kind of like if you're driving on a road that's really washboardy, and I know like you wouldn't like you haven't done this, Scott, but gravel roads really get they get this thing called washboard where there's like lines forming the road, and when you drive over them, it's just like a constant vibration thing. But if you hit it like just the right speed, you can kind of skip over the top of them. So I wonder if it's like something like that, where they're just kind of like, if you can time it just right, you can like, you know, muffle it in like in, you know, a variety of different ways. But I was expecting him just to do like a horribly like annoying, obnoxious engine braking just to like, you know, mask sounds.
That's what I thought too.
Yeah. That's not
to be. So beyond that aspect of it, but as far as the way the scene played out, because I that was, you know, as far as just pure tension, I thought that they worked that really well, especially with a character that we're, you know, maybe we care about a little bit, because he's a nice guy. He's like, you know, he's the German Gale, so to speak. But
Yeah, I was more, you know, it was definitely tense, but I wasn't really expecting like something to blow up, because it just seemed too predictable. I guess I'm probably like thinking too many steps ahead there, but I was more puzzled than anything, just wondering, you know, like what his issue was exactly. And it does kind of remind me, I mean, this season seems to have had a lot of like Great Escape Dive references, so maybe this is a reference. I think, was it Charles Bronson's character like just couldn't handle like being underground at some point?
Yes.
In that, so maybe it was like something like, you know, there's like a nod to that also.
Hmm. Okay, I hadn't thought of that. That's not bad. I like that. I'm gonna go with that. Yet another Great Escape reference made on the show. Excellent. So other than Mike getting to party briefly with the Germans, even Kai seems fairly decent. He talks to Werner, who's again kind of in depression mode because of how long he's been there and away from his wife. We get yet another little nugget, albeit only a sentence, slight information about Mike. I like that, you know, for Mike's backstory, most of the time we have to find like one sentence here or there, like about his dad in a previous week. And now we find out, oh, he was married for 22 years. Don't know what happened to her. But at least we know that there was 22 years he was married, which makes some sense. I don't know if he was divorced or if she died or what. We don't know yet. But anyway, the whole thing about, let's get to the point that Werner escapes. Speaking of great escapes, which actually makes that perfect. I will give them credit that wasn't where I thought they were going to go with this, even though, and I love the fact that they kind of, they play that game with us, with the way they've been building this up for the last few weeks. We've all been going, okay, they're going to be killing the Germans, they're going to go, then the way he was acting and screwing up at the place, like, oh, they're going to kill him. And of course, if they do catch him at this point, I think they are going to kill him. But it never occurred to me that he would actually try to escape from the place. So I give them all the credit in the world for doing something which didn't even occur to me. And one could say, hey, they told you in the title, you were just too busy being a smartass thinking meant they're going to die. It's like, no, he's just saying goodbye. So what did you guys think about how that whole thing played out? Because I did not see it coming until it happened.
Well, one, that, Vita Sane itself does not mean goodbye. It means again. So I thought it was kind of funny that that's what was written on the rock wall that they were going to blow up, because he had to go back down and reset it again. I don't know if it's going to mean anything for Werner's story, but do we know what the head security that Mike is always talking with, that's watching the cameras, do we know his name? Did we ever get a character name for him?
I don't remember.
Okay. Well, we're going to call him Almost Christian Bale. That's what I have written down in my notes, because I don't have his name and I couldn't find his name anywhere. So he's Almost Christian Bale. But I liked the whole scene where they were going through with the pixels that had blown out, and, you know, but the scene that had led up to that, where you could see Werner like checking out the cameras, where he just walked away from his phone call and put out his cigarette and he had that really long pan. Mm-hmm. I thought that was an amazing shot and probably my favorite part of the entire episode.
Hmm. Interesting. Just since you kind of sort of corrected me, just to add to your correction, it's actually Meet Again. And which is why it is used as a farewell, because it's someone saying, until we meet again. That's what right. people use it. So my saying goodbye, it's still correct.
It's the German later, dude.
Yeah. So, again, it also tells us, like, so we should be seeing it again, because, you know, meet again, until we meet again. I also enjoyed the way they were just, you know, going through everything and how he figures out at the last. Because when he picked that thing up and, you know, on the ground for a minute there, I didn't know what it was, and I thought it was like some sort of like communication device or something. Like I thought he was about to like a phone. He was going to say something to him, which made no sense.
And then it might be a memo recorder, maybe.
And then we see it's like essentially it's like a laser pointer. Which is what he was using to, you know, flare out the cameras, or whatever. How is this guy going to get away? Because where they are, it's not like he drove away anywhere. So, I'm gonna go out on a limb and say they're probably gonna catch up to him in the next episode. I would be surprised if he actually does make it back to Germany, or even out a couple miles away from there. But
it would be interesting if this carried over into the next season, though. I mean, not that this is something that they normally do, but they don't rarely have a 20 episode order instead of a 10. So you never know.
I guess.
I don't think it's compelling enough to necessarily need to last into the next season. Mind you, I think I'd be fine with them wrapping it up and moving on to the next thing.
Yeah, I mean, much like, if I'm going to be totally honest here, much like the finding out about the bell, I look at the super lab as just a really big version of the bell. I was never that pondering, wow, how did they ever build that super lab? I hope we get an entire season or two about the building of it. It's just, I mean, I feel like, and I've been into it, you know, I've liked the interaction between Mike and Werner especially, and whatever, it's been, you know, so it's been entertaining, but has it really given me that much? Are there moments where like I'd rather get back to either the Nacho Gus whatever stuff or the Jim and Kimmy stuff, because I just feel that's more a bit more important, you know, moving forward, where this is kind of just filling a gap, so to speak. I hate using the word filler, because every time people use it when we talk about other TV shows, I want to strangle them. No, but it's borderline. It's really borderline.
Yeah, I don't know. I find it all pretty like really interesting, even though it's like not something that would have ever been on my to-do list. I mean, I'm used like literally
can be
like, the entire thing to be like, you know, just cool to see what they're doing.
Filler can be interesting. It's not, you know, they're not mutually exclusive. It's just as far as, is this something that I needed to, that I was really dying or needed to know about? You know, it's not as bad as say like, you know, the story behind Jack's tattoos on Lost or something like that. But there are a lot of things like on Lost that were, people had mysteries about. I was like, I'm not really wondering about that. You know, I don't need to see how I wouldn't need to know how they built the hatches. I'm not really curious about that. Why would I be wondering about that? For me, it'd be like watching a movie about a haunted house, and then I have to have another movie tell me how they built the house. It's like, I don't need to know how they built the house. It's not really that relevant. But I'm entertained by it. I'm trying to. I'm also trying to balance out being somewhat critical. And it's a little bit of a criticism because I'm looking at these scenes as more as building up Mike and giving me more about Mike. So when we get two things, we either get little bits of his backstory or we see how he gets more ingratiated into working for Gus and where that's eventually going to go. And like I said, my thought last week, if he's the one who has to actually execute, say, Werner or anyone else, but especially that guy, that means he's crossed another line. That now he's not just working for these guys, you know, in a criminal enterprise. Now he's actually taken a life, which I'm fairly certain he has not done yet. He hasn't crossed that line, so I wouldn't call Mike. Even though we know that Mike is killed, but he hasn't killed for Gus. That would be, you know, that's when he becomes really one of them, as far as I'm concerned. I also wonder, does he have multiple outfits that are the same, like a big closet? Because he's always wearing the same. No, he is, which is fine. It's like Clark Kent always having like the blue suit and the red tie. It's like it's always the same thing. So that would probably take us to what I was looking at as more the meat of the episode, which would be the Jim and Kimmy stuff, or the Kim and Jimmy stuff, if you prefer tackling it. So Act One, we get to see essentially a con or a scam or whatever you want to call it. And Kim is not only a very strong participant in it, obviously, this is something more to, in some way or another, benefit her, or at least her situation with her and Mesa Verde. So instead of me going into any specific describing, because we all know what happened, I just want to hear you guys talk about it and how this thing was put together. So what do you think of that first act here and the opening con, so to speak?
I think poor Shirley. poor Shirley. She's just trying to help.
It's always fun to see that actress in things because she's always had like weird parts on other shows. Because I think probably a lot of our listeners watch The Leftovers. So I remember she was on The Leftovers where... Yep. And I think she was also on, what was it? There's another show I've seen her on where she was kind of weird. I can't think of it right now. It'll come to me. That it's just, this is the only time I've seen her relatively normal. She always seems to be playing like very odd or goofy characters or strange characters or characters that don't talk or something like that. So, but I love the idea. The whole you left the baby in the wreck. I just love and it being milk that ends up messing everything. I got a huge kick out of it. Even though I was trying to figure out, wait, what's the point of this whole thing? And then when they finally say, oh, okay, all right, is that really what you had in mind when, like, you know, let's do it again? That's a scam, so you could get away with getting a slightly larger conference room for the Lubbock branch of a Mesa Verde, which makes that conversation they have in the diner afterwards so good. And not just because of the joke about the pancake, which I thought about our silly, the silly things that people talk about with the pancakes and the waffles, whatever.
But he very important.
But he did make a great point. It's like places always talk, they always say it's, we have the biggest, but they never say it's the best. It's like,
yeah, having a big pancake isn't that impressive. What, you dump more batter on there? You more flavorless, mushy, garbage goo batter? Congratulations, losers.
Yes, the pancake thing has now saturated our podcast for a change as well.
Yes.
But...
like, it's saturated with syrup.
Waffle sauce.
I'm all about the waffles, so...
Exactly.
And all their shapes and sizes, not just one specific type. So this conversation they're having. So we know that it's basically it's a week away from him supposedly getting his license back, or at least so he thinks at this point. And there's that excitement level. It's the post-con rush kind of thing happening. But I like the idea that she says she wants to only do this when, you know, for the right reasons, you know, use our powers for good, so to speak. And he points out to her, he's like, what we just did, which was, you know, for your client, a bank, to get a bigger, it's like, is that really something that would qualify as, like, only for good? And I was like, wow, I'm so used to other characters being hypocritical. I love the fact he just caught her, and albeit minor, just a little bit of hypocrisy. But, I really enjoyed the scene. And it's one of those things where it's kind of like the calm before the storm, because you take that scene, and then you smash it up later to the other scene between them. Ooh. Kind of a night and day kind of a thing. So we do get to the point where he goes for the hearing about getting his license back. And he's in super Jimmy selling himself kind of mode, whatever. I was struck during the scene of, although I thought he was doing well for the most part, I have to agree with what Kim was like. I kept waiting for him to say something about Chuck, and I realized if he doesn't say something about Chuck, that's not going to go over well. So the way that whole scene plays out and directly afterwards, what was your take on it, Jamie?
I knew it was going to go that way for the same reasons, because he never brought up his brother. I mean, even when he said that he ended up working with a bunch of attorneys, I mean, he didn't even include what his brother did for a living and that his brother inspired him or anything like that. So I had a pretty good idea where that was going to lead.
But, to be fair, him bringing up Chuck would be kind of like, you know, looking for the sympathy vote. So I can't, even though he's like way in denial, I really can't like, you know, totally fault him for like not leaning on that, because I mean, yeah, it looked like they were waiting for it. I'm sure some of them knew Chuck or respected him or whatever. But
Well, Chuck is at the core of why he ended up losing his license to begin with. So one of the issues was like, it's also another version of showing remorse for what you did, which is kind of a big thing. Think of trying to get your license back the same as like you're up for parole. If the parole board doesn't get a feeling that you're not even trying to express remorse for what you did, they don't let you out. That pretty much goes without saying. They gave him another chance in that meeting. That's the amazing thing. Because I was when she asked him the question about what is it you love? Was it what? How do you feel about the law, or why do you love the law, or whatever that question was? I didn't write that, but it was the big question, so I should have written it down. And then he has that whole long answer about, you know, he takes a little while to get to it, so he's not quite as quick on his feet as he normally is, because it threw him off. Although he probably, honestly, that's a kind of obvious question. He should have seen that coming, because it reminded me of when you go for a job interview. You know, there's always those five or six questions that you should be prepared for, because they may very well ask you a question like that. That seemed like a very obvious type of question that they would ask him here. But even though, and he came up with a remotely decent answer, but then that woman asks him again about what influence, when she said the influence question, she's like, she's serving it up to you, dude. You don't have to get all sentimental about it. You know, you could even say, you know, I don't really like talking about my brother after what happened, you know, because they also know he passed away. But to not mention it at all, yeah, that was his, I mean, that's the mistake he made. I mean, the question of sincerity or insincerity, you know, that's neither here nor there, but that's really what the court, I mean, that's what Kim picks up on. The way she looks at him when they have that scene, that great scene, you know, on top of the parking lot thing, takes us back to the way she looks at him when he reads the letter earlier this season. And it's again, it's how he hasn't, nothing has moved forward for him for all these months. He's still in that denial stage where he's just totally cut his brain off or his heart off from anything Chuck ever represented to him. And maybe that's, and I get that that's warranted because of how horrible a person Chuck was to him, even if Chuck was ultimately right about him, quite frankly, but still pretty bad to him. But to not have progressed any, all you can think is like, dude, maybe you should have taken her up on that therapy idea, because it's really, really clear. And especially the way that whole scene with Kim plays out afterwards. I mean, he does a lot of textbook things there. So as we talk about the hearing, and then him right after the hearing, we can go right into the Kim Jimmy confrontation scene now, because that's probably the biggest scene in the entire episode, I would say. It's certainly the most uncomfortable scene in the entire episode. So since we got a lady here.
Yeah, that's me.
And straight.
Okay, we got two ladies here. So we can talk about both since one keeps referencing the other anyway. So what were you feeling? What were you thinking when you were watching that? Because it was making me feeling kind of... The last time I felt that sick watching, you know, people go, you know, yammering like that was probably just a few days ago with the... last Thursday between Kavanaugh and Ford, quite frankly. Oh. That's right, I brought it there.
I you know what? Maybe it should have bothered me, but honestly, the whole time that they were fighting, I was like, ah, finally. Like, it was a relief because they were just both, like, unburdening themselves of all of their... I mean, you know, Kim definitely had more reality-based statements being, you know, thrown towards Jimmy. But, I mean, I don't know. It was a relief. It's like, finally, get it out. Get it all out. Say what you have to say. But then at the end when she said, "You're always down," I was like, oh, he's not gonna get over that ever. That was, she's always encouraged him, even when he's doing wrong. She's always been there to pick him up. I mean, we see at the end she's still, you know, there to encourage him, but those words, that's not ever gonna leave.
Nor should it. I mean, I was listening to what you were saying, and I kept waiting for you. You finally did say it at a certain point, because I was starting to worry about you there, Jamie. Because, you know, them finally saying what they have to, like, well, I would say that for her.
Yeah.
Not him.
No. She was throwing balls of reality, and he was swinging and missing, like, left and right. But he was pure defense on his side. Just,
well, he's lashing out at her. She, you know, and unjustly so, quite frankly. He's projecting, as someone was a friend of mine was texting me during it, and I was like, oh my God, he's so... And I was like, yep, that's exactly what he's doing. Because...
He was so insecure, and he's just, I mean, you can just tell, like, this is the guy just, you know, thinks he's below her league, and just handling it so poorly.
Right. But you gotta look at the fact, too, is that we may realize that he wasn't being as sincere as he should have been, but he really thought he was being sincere in the moment. I mean, he can look back and see where he missed, but he really thought he was being sincere. And it's one of the few times that he thinks he's being completely sincere and it backfires on him.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't win. You know, he always wins with insincerity. You know, it sounds like sincerity, but he doesn't really feel those things that he's usually saying to win a case or to prove a point.
See, that I think that's actually an interesting point to debate or not. And again, it's thin hairs at this point, because I thought the thing was, I don't know if he believed that he was sincere regardless of what he was saying here, because everything else he was saying is untrue. So why would that be any more true than anything else? He believed he was coming off as sincere. He believed he was pulling that off. because everything he's been, most everything he ever does is, you know, he's put on an act. He's put on a performance. It's showtime. That's his thing. You know, he thought,
right.
You know, he was even something like psyching himself up. Because if you actually listen to most of what he says in that room, you're like, well, I don't really think that's what it's about. You know, that's not really what you're about. You know, you're even cribbing a few things from Kim, because you're not going to convince me that at any point Jimmy is in this because he really genuinely wants to help people.
That's true, and he also used the word capricious. So I guess you make a good point.
Right. But what I did love about where I would say he was sincere during the hearing, honest, I think he was honest about his assessment of himself as a lawyer and the way he spoke about that. That I totally believed. And I was like, yeah, that's probably true. I love the fact he went into the whole thing about the University of American Samoa, by the way. I mean, I was wearing the t-shirt tonight, you know, and I had no idea it was actually going to become a point of conversation, which has yet to have happened on the show before. And it was, but the problem was, they know who he is. They know who his brother is, because, you know, that's what the whole thing was about. Plus, kind of a famous lawyer in those parts, blah, 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 yada, 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 whatever. The fact that he would talk about all of that and becoming a lawyer and everything he went through, and still never even a reference to his brother, or the fact that a law firm that he went to go work for was that law firm. And again, you can say, well, they know that, but the fact that he just doesn't even acknowledge it, at least the way they're going to read it. I mean, we could say... Yeah,
it should have been acknowledged.
Yeah. And I can understand... I mean, because we know what he's feeling about his brother, or not feeling, so to speak. And we know that he's kind of closed himself. And I get that. But he should be aware, or self-aware enough to know better. And he, as we see in that scene with Kim, he's not maybe quite as self-aware as I wanted to give him credit for. Just the way, because the way he lashes out at her and everything he says, and I was like, dude, this is the one person you should not be saying this stuff to. This is the one person it's not true. And it's what Dan was saying. It's his, because I think he's always been insecure in his relationship with her because of what you were saying, Dan. Like, you know, she's a better person than he is. You know, it's not just that she's a better lawyer, but she's just a better person.
It's like she's the new Chuck to him, where like all of a sudden she's better at everything. You know, she's a better person. He just feels completely inadequate. So I think it's just kind of like he's like transferred like all that crap like onto her, totally like bullshit unfairly.
You know what? I'd say a little bit maybe. Certainly, the stuff of her when she started working for that law firm, and like that whole scene that happened a few episodes ago, you know, with the talking about the retreats there, whatever. But I think that resentment of that, and that the fact that she could acquire such a position is also tied to. And I love that they got into it during this fight about her not sharing an office with him. And again, that kind of goes to the delusion that he's under to a certain extent. It's like, yeah, she's not you. And it really, quite frankly, it really wouldn't make sense at this point for her to share a law office with you, especially now that she's going to be like a named partner there practically, or something along those lines. They made her a partner. They did say that, I think, in a previous episode. So... Yeah, I mean, what I really liked about it and why I was so uncomfortable is because Jimmy's self-destructing. And it's one thing, we've seen him make mistakes, where it's like, oh, that wasn't the right decision, you know, that's been a constant. But this is just something it wouldn't stop. And I was like, dude, stop, because is this... is this going to be the final? And every time something bad happens between them, I always think, oh God, is this going to be the moment where they're no longer together? And it's going to be him screwing up and causing the breakup as opposed to her leaving him. So then again, they put a bomb on it all later on when, you know, he has the quiet, you know, I messed things up. And she still is going to, like you were saying, Jamie, she's still going to be there for him when she says, you know, do you still want to be a lawyer? Let's start with that, I think was the line or something. So, but it was just painful for me because the thing that's keeping me, I mean, there's a lot of things that keep me watching this week after week because I love the show. But the core of the show, the heart of the show is Kim and the Jimmy Kim relationship. And seeing him screwing it up so badly here. And when she goes through that litany of things, which is like, how do you not see? Like, she's done everything she can for you. You know, it was just very, that's why I was upset. I was very upset by it.
You know, I think that if I hadn't watched Breaking Bad, and from what we can tell on Breaking Bad, you know, he's pretty much on his own. We don't ever hear any references about Kim or a Kim or anything. Mm-hmm. If I were just watching this show without seeing that, I think I would probably be a lot more tore up about it. But like we were talking the last time I was with you guys, it's just like you just see it coming from a mile away, especially, you know, when you follow the other series. So when they had that fight, it wasn't like, oh God, I'm really tore up about this. I was like really happy that Kim finally got to just like lay it out.
Right. See, I'm of two minds on whether it's better or worse that we know, or at least, I mean, obviously we don't know exactly what's going to happen here. We can speculate, we speculate and theorize all the time, you know, whatever. And it certainly appears that she's no longer in his life by the time he's on Breaking Bad with Saul Goodman. Although, who knows what they'll come up with, you know. But I don't know if it makes it better or worse when I watch these scenes. Because, yes, there's a constant, you know, it's like a cloud hanging over them. Because you know eventually this is going to have to be busted apart. Where if this show was just by itself and there was no Breaking Bad, it would just be a scene like, oh, that was horrible. But, you know, I wouldn't necessarily think that they would ever break them up. Because I would keep thinking, well, they're the two main... He's the main character and she's the female lead. I mean, you know, that's probably going to be somewhat like a highfalutin soap opera. Maybe they'll break up again, but maybe they'll get back together again because, you know, why else have her on the show and blah, 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 blah. Right now, like, I know they eventually have to be busted apart. So it even makes this the sweet, poignant scenes with them still have a touch of dread to them because you know it's going to happen. And I can't think of it. I don't know if I've ever seen it with another show before because I don't know that many prequel shows I've ever actually watched now that I think about it, if any. So I don't know if it makes it harder for me to watch those scenes or easier. I'd have to think about that one. Maybe I'll have an answer by next week. I can't think. Trying to think of what else happened in that scene. I mean, you kind of laid it out there when you were talking about it, Jamie, just the way she just runs through all the things she's done, but that final gut kick of, oh, you're always down, I was like, ooh. By the way, when I guarantee when I'm assuming it was Jennifer Hutcherson's writing that scene, that's like the key line. She's like, that's the line. I was like, I need to build to that line. How do we get to that line? Because and she's also dead right, because he kind of always is. At least, you know, she always has to, like, bail him out and stuff. So, yeah, it was, I really think this show, for the last, I mean, again, I thought the season was just fine or even great all along, but I feel they've really picked it up the last three or four episodes, where it's, like, now I am watching in real time, where I'm not even watching on delay anymore, and I don't remember the last time I did that with almost any TV show. And which is, it's just fascinating, because last year I thought they peaked mid-season, And then the second half of the season, which was fine, but it never felt quite as, as the first half did. This season, it's the second half which has really got me going. So it's almost killing me. We only have one more episode left, but I'm definitely looking forward to it. I hope it's a 2-hour episode. It won't be, but I would like it to be.
You can hope.
Do you have anything else you want to say about either this episode or the season so far? I mean, feel free. We're doing surprisingly well on time for a change. So.
I'll be interested to see how the other Germans react to whatever the hell's going on with Werner.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me figure out he's gone. And he left notes, right? He was that what Mike picked up off the end of the bed? Was that his notes?
Yeah.
It was two different sheets of paper. I assumed one was a note and one was like instructions or something like that as far as what they needed to do. Because that seemed like the kind of thing he would do. Because it's kind of like what he was saying he would do if he was going to go visit his wife for the weekend. That's the other thing. Do you think he did this with the expectation he was just escaping, period? Or is like, I'm going to be right. I'll be back in a few days. I'm just kind of wondering.
Yeah. It definitely seemed like, he probably knew that he wouldn't be able to, just waltz right back in. So. I think, yeah, in his left hand, it was some kind of, like, technical schematics, and his right hand was, a personal letter to Mike, most likely.
Because he has to know if his plan was to just to leave, period, they know where you live in Germany. You think they're not going to come get you? Have you not picked up on who these people are that you're working for? So... But again, he's kind of going through a bit of his own mental instability as well, as he suffered the panic anxiety and everything else. So he's thinking clearly enough to come up with an amazing plan to get out of there. But he's not really thinking clearly enough, like, you don't really think you're going to get away with this, are you? Jamie.
Yeah, he's, hey, we see him talking about his wife and we see his little like panic attack because he knows he's going to have to go deal with this stick of dynamite. But in the last episode that we saw him, I've been kind of getting this vibe that he is actually kind of has caught on to who he's working for and what the stakes are. And he might be really uncomfortable sticking around.
I have to go on the assumption he kind of got that sense from the get-go. Why else would you be going through this entire secret operation if you're working with cameras?
But after his little flub at the his R&R during his R&R, I think it shifted something. Like it was like, okay, yeah, this was serious, but. Like I don't think it's just a matter of I really miss my wife, because that definitely could be a huge part of all this. But I think he's getting out of there for his own safety.
Which quite frankly might make it an even dumber decision because
it may very well, yes.
Because that's the one thing you shouldn't do. Like, he didn't, again, unless there was a vehicle there for him to steal, and it doesn't appear that there was, you're on foot, and you're a good distance away from any, I just got a feeling it's not going to be pretty. I mean, I could be wrong. I've been wrong several times this season, but I got a feeling it's not going to be pretty for him.
Well, it's not going to end well. It's not going to end well for him.
Kai is going to be put in charge.
Well, what if this just came to me, don't ask me why, but if Lalo and Nacho are on their way out to the chicken farm, maybe they get him, maybe they encounter him.
That would be an odd crossing of plots. Would they pick up would Lalo and Nacho pick up a hitchhiker?
Well, they definitely would be interested in what's going on with Gus's operation. So,
Well, I don't know if they know from a random German guy in the middle of nowhere.
No, but if they're out there and they saw some dude just, you know, storming out there, I'm sure they'd pick him up.
Right. No, I see. I'm sure there's a way they can coordinate that. That'd be interesting. It would be interesting to see those two things kind of fold over on each other. In which case, then at least, then this plot line becomes something that's more important to the show than I believe it to be right now. I hadn't thought of that. Because he was driving out to the chicken farm. Although this is the... I'm kind of looking... I guess they were leaving Los Pollos earlier that day. And this... Is the sense we're getting that this happened... That when we're in it, he did this over... This happened in the middle of the night that he did this, I'm guessing? Yeah, because Mike comes in with the coffee, so it's something... So these great security guards that were on duty still... Never noticed the guy getting out and zapping the lens, which is one of them should probably lose their lives, I'm saying. Yeah, that could be interesting. Anything else? It's
gotta be something. Not really.
Wow. All right, then. The one time I wouldn't mind people talking more is the one time no one has anything to say. can we write that down? Worst penultimate podcast. No, just kidding.
I think we covered it all pretty well. I'm not feeling bad. We didn't get into. I mean, we could have talked about the pancake situation a little bit longer. I feel, but I think it's okay if we keep going.
Oh boy! I thought we'd talk about the cool angles. Like I love the opening angle of Kim making her way to the Lubbock City Hall. So anyway, let me just think if there was anything else before.
Really cool camera shots in Jimmy and Kim's apartment at the end, too. Like, I really like the way they set up the apartment.
Yeah.
Was, like, used a variety of different techniques and long shots, and it really kind of helped. It made that scene better. More better.
More better? Mo better? Well, one of the things about this show and its predecessor is that they always have a very cinematic look to everything, and I admire like the scene with, like you said, in the apartment, their use of interiors that way. They make it feel like that apartment is huge, and it probably is a big apartment if it's hers because she, you know, she makes a decent amount of money, whatever. But you know. They're using the entire frame, and even though it seems like they're like miles away from each other in that apartment, they're still occupying the same frame. Even though you know it's doorway within doorway, whatever. I love, my eyes catch all that. I love the way that's all put together, and the sadness of that scene, because without even saying a word, he's going on the assumption when he shows up, like, well, it's time for me to move out now, and. You know, because he's got the box, he's getting his stuff, and all I'm thinking is like, oh my god, is this when he ends up sleeping in the back of a nail salon from this point on again or something? I was happy to see her approach him, you know, and again when we're watching them, we do see them outside the mirror, but then we're watching within the mirror as well. So it's a frame within a frame kind of a thing. So I always get a kick out of that, and you can see that Gilligan working with the cinematographer, they very much have, you know, movies and noir in their mind where they put those kind of scenes together. There's a lot of noir-ish kind of cinematography on this show, but probably more so, I would say, than even on Breaking Bad. They definitely make more use of light and shadow and space on this show than I think they did on Breaking Bad, quite frankly. You can either back me up or
yeah, their technique has definitely evolved since then, and I mean then you know they're able to take, you know, increasingly larger chances.
Yes.
Greater chances. You know, because they're able to, I mean, you know, they can just look back in their body work and just be like, you know, and let you know, we've pulled off this, we've pulled off that, everybody loves this. Let's try something interesting. And since they have such a good, solid team there that they've somehow managed to gather in the middle of the fucking desert, they just keep finding a way to do interesting stuff. You know, even just the scene with Tyrus driving the truck, they managed to make that look, you know, look cool, but still in a way different than a lot of the other vehicle driving scenes we've seen on the two shows.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, a bunch of professionals working at their craft, doing a good job.
Since I made an odd, silly reference to it before, and I couldn't help but think about it during that hearing scene, Jamie.
Yeah.
I'm aware that you watched the hearings and what happened last week in Washington, D.C. When Jimmy's going on about his life and the law and his education and everything, at any point, did you think I had any point of Kavanaugh going on about his life and how he made his
and
way
his up? Love of beer?
Yeah, I thought this is such an oddly timed episode because of the way he's going on, and he's trying to, and also the whole, especially what it turns out to be his sincerity or lack thereof, and my mind went back to that, and I remember going on about how he worked his way through school and Yale, and hearing Jimmy going on about, you know, University of American Samoa, it's a correspondence class, and work, you know, I busted my, you know, 12 times. I was like, wow, there. It's there's something kind of eerie going on here that this episode shows up a few days later, and there's a certain weird similarity there. I mean obviously it's totally coincidental, but I kind of got a strange kick out of that.
Yeah, the stars did align for those who have a dark sense of humor.
See, if they hadn't gotten Matt Damon to do Kavanaugh on Saturday Night Live this weekend, I would have said, oh, dude, get Odenkirk technically worked for Saturday Night Live for a little while there. Come on, bring him on to be Kavanaugh. That'd be awesome. He could just be in Saul Goodman mode, except, you know, with better suits. Okay, all right. I guess I should stop dragging this sucker out. Okay. So next week, I believe we're going to try to get the entire Better Call Saul gang together to do the season finale, to discuss it. I mean, not to do it, that sounds weird.
Yeah, our associates, our legal team, or an illegal team in Jamie's case, since she's not a lawyer.
That's right.
Yet.
That's right.
American Samoa is still U.S. territory for now, so you might be able to squeeze in there before we kick them out for not being the right skin color.
So we will be getting back here to talk about the finale at some point that week, and that's about it. Yeah, I'll pull the plug on this sucker now. So if you enjoy this podcast, you'll enjoy hanging out on our Facebook page as well. It's the Serious TV Drama podcast page, so you can like the page and join in conversations about shows like Better Call Saul and so many others. You can track us down on iTunes. Type in Serious TV Drama Podcast. You can subscribe to our feed as well as rate and review us there. You can type Serious TV Drama Podcast into Google and find us in 18,000 other places, apparently. I'm hopefully that's where those download numbers don't show up, and thus we have a lot more listeners than I think we do. And you can also follow us on the Twitter. Our handle is at STVD Podcast. STVD Podcast as in... wow, it is late. I'm screwing up that. At STVD Podcast.
Sexually transmitted venereal
disease. Which was our original idea for why we called this podcast what it is. The sad thing is that that's almost mostly true, if I'm remembering right.
Yeah, we're consistently real dummies, but
yeah, we're okay. Like, wouldn't it be funny if our podcast sounded like it was like a sexually transmitted disease? it would have been funny if we had actually called it something relating to Mad Men, because when we first were doing this, it was supposed to be a Mad Men podcast, and
that's true.
That it wasn't. Anyway. All right. Wow. We're talking like we've been doing this for 2.5 hours, yet we're barely at the hour 10 mark. It's really strange. All right.
It's late.
Yeah, it's late. We started well after midnight. It's probably that. And I didn't have a script to go by, so it's kind of winging it. All right. Well, Jamie, it was lovely having you here as always, or at least since last time you were here.
And thanks for having me again.
Yeah, you're a lot better than Brian, so good stuff.
Brian is amazing. Don't be mean to Bri.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Bri.
Okay.
I'm insecure and I'm projecting because he wanted to kick me off the podcast.
Oh, no, but that's not till next year. Yes, okay. So, and but you're lovely as well, Dan. Anyway, so I'm going to start the string of goodnights here. So, good night, Jamie. Good night, Dan. Good night, everybody out there.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, Jamie. Good night, Scott. Good night, the lovely people out there.